Folks, I know this will come as a surprise, but there's only a few weeks left in the semester and in the year. So when I got back from our Thanksgiving break and returned to the TCEA offices, I was thinking about how we're going to close out 2019, the things we might be thinking about, and the directions we might want to take our learning, our teaching, and maybe even this podcast in the coming year. So I sat down and I started going through all the topics we've been through so far on this show. And I thought about all the people we've interviewed, and I thought about all the things they said. Well, as I went through all of this, I realized we had hours and hours of conversation that just never made it into the podcast. Now, I know what you're thinking. A clip show, Andrew? That's a little predictable at the end of the year. Well, I don't want this to be a traditional clip show. This isn't a greatest hits episode. No, this one instead is a look back at some of the topics we've talked about and an expansion of those discussions. You see, I've gone back to a few episodes I really enjoyed and found some spots where there were just parts of our conversation that got cut for time or didn't quite make it. Well, some of these are really useful and can help build out some of the things I heard in our earlier meetings of the EdTech Club. So, that's what we're going to do today. We're going to go back through some of the topics we've talked about before and fill in some gaps. We're going to listen to unheard footage from some of our previous interviews, and it all starts right now. Hey everybody, I'm Andrew Rausch, and welcome back to the EdTech Club. If you're here, you're part of the club. So, let's jump in and get started. In our September 19th episode of the EdTech Club, we talked with TCEA's own Director of Professional Development, Miguel Gulen, and we talked all about instructional strategies. One he described is called reciprocal teaching, a process that essentially creates a dialogue between teacher and student as they work together to decode a text. So, if that sounds interesting, go listen to that episode. But one thing that didn't make it into that episode, though, was more of our discussion of the kinds of students, particularly the kinds of readers, who are aided by strategies like this. Miguel also described some of the reading comprehension issues that might see improvement through such strategies. Here's Miguel. So thinking about your strategy example of reciprocal teaching, forgive my ignorance or my slowness to pick it up, but the reciprocity aspect of that then is that you're empowering a student to ask questions of the text rather than be asked questions about the text, which they can maybe memorize or regurgitate or something. This way, it's sort of leading more toward a genuine synthesis of a text where they can, say, read a news story out in the real world, make a prediction about what might happen as a consequence of what they're reading, or clarify what something means if they don't know what it means, an entity or a person, and be able to take meaning out of those words.
Right, and when we think about reciprocal teaching, it's essentially a comprehension strategy. And it has 30 years of success and behind it. Students will often encounter many kinds of problems when they're working through text. Sometimes, as readers, and Andrew, I'm going to guess that you read quite a bit.
I do.
And so do I. But there's an ongoing conversation as we go through a text. If we're reading a nonfiction author, maybe they're putting forth a certain perspective. And as we're reading, we're interrogating the author. We're holding them accountable for their ideas. But bad readers don't do that. And I don't want to assign a value here. Let's say readers that don't have these strategies as part of their toolkit, that they haven't internalized these processes, then they aren't able to interrogate the author and the text. And so a lot is lost. So some of the comprehension problems that students encounter, just focusing on reciprocal teaching is one of the many strategies that work. They can decode text fluently, but they don't know what they've read. They can't remember it. It doesn't stick to their brains. They might read 2 or more years below grade level. But they might also, again, be right on grade level, but they're encountering a text that's too difficult for them. Mm-hmm. So they, what do they do to handle the challenging words or concepts? And how do they have a conversation with other people about that? Reciprocal teaching is a cooperative learning strategy. And we think of reading and writing as often solitary events, and they may very well be later on. But at the start, you can use reciprocal teaching, certainly in the classroom, and it is a cooperative learning activity. If you never write anything down with reciprocal teaching, that's okay, because it's all about the conversation and coming to an understanding as, I guess, allowed part of the chat. It's just the same way that we're trying to understand this reciprocal teaching strategy and how it fits in strategies that work. We're having a conversation about that, and that's the real power and value. So one of the neat things about reciprocal teaching is that it translates into about 2 years of growth in 1 year. And reciprocal teaching actually endures long after you've stopped doing it. So let's say as a teacher, I do this for 20 to 30 days in my classroom with my students. We do it 2 to 3 times a week. Students internalize the process, the questioning, the summarizing, and all of that. And it endures with them, and research shows, long after that. So the following year, they're still doing that. They're still able to add that process. Why? Because it's now part of who they are, and they're able to do that.
Of course, strategies are just one part of teaching, right? Another part, a bedrock of teaching, really is curriculum. Now, in 2 episodes so far, we've discussed open educational resources, that is, non-copyrighted or otherwise free curriculum resources. They're usually developed by schools and districts themselves. In episode 15, Christina Ishmael of New America talked about this, and I wanted to share with you a bit more about our conversation on the need for and practice of what we call OER and how professional development can boost the practice.
Well, and I know that we have resources in Texas in particular, like through the ESCs to help support this through professional development. Nationally, we have the same kind of service agencies in most states that can help provide professional development and professional learning for this type of work. So that certainly helps. But nationally, we're trying to work on providing more opportunities for that, because that's really important to me in particular. And right now it's just me. And so building up that capacity, like a lot of the districts were saying, well, we don't have the capacity to do that. And I was like, yep, I understand. I feel ya. So it is that maintenance, but it also requires a mind shift too around how we look at instructional materials. So if we were on that traditional cycle of we bought it this year, we don't look at it again for 6, 7, 8 years or whenever funds are available, this is different, because if we're putting together links to various resources, we're going to have to check those links often and make sure that they are still working. And so it becomes a much more iterative process where we're reevaluating the resources that we're using, whether it's per semester or yearly or whatever that looks like. It becomes a different process in all of this too.
Another topic that's been featured in our EdTech Club meetings is esports. After all, it seems to be growing at a rate that few might have predicted a few years ago. You might even be considering starting a club at your school. Maybe you've been voluntold to, or maybe your students just really want you to. Often in these conversations, the question of the educational value of esports comes up. Of course, there's no one answer to this, but like traditional sports, there's a number of academic and life skills being taught. Notably, the real-world learning doesn't just happen in the actual playing of the game, the button mashing, the strategy, even the teamwork. It can also come from learning how to organize, market, and even stream those games online. Here's esports educator and coach Kyle Berger in a clip that didn't make it into episode 11.
Fortunately, the world provides lots of great resources for lessons.
Yes.
So we do have the opportunity and review different things that professionals from the things they've done streaming, even down to social media comments or just different, you know, how we all know one tweet can totally redirect your career in an instant. So we use those types of examples to share with our students and talk about that. So as now we're building into preseason play, and we're already practicing streaming. We don't usually stream live our first couple of weeks as we're kind of getting used to the conversations and the flow with our students. And then we slowly start our live streaming aspect of it. But it does take some getting used to. It takes learning the skills of just a broadcaster in general on how to, you know, control your emotions, what you're saying. You're not just sitting in here with your friends. Other people are going to listen to it, and how to fill dead time on the air, or what to talk about when your team's getting killed, you know, and you're way behind and the other team's really doing amazing, and how to properly reflect that, because these students are actually, as broadcasters, just like the players, are building portfolios online that we are in then turn sharing with collegiate opportunities around us to connect our kids for scholarship opportunities.
And here's educator and coach Matt Tarpley from episode 12.
I mean, you know, what's the biggest thing any employer looks for? It's like social skills. That's like their biggest thing. You know, education, your degree, probably not so important, but they all looking for those social skills.
Right.
Being able to communicate effectively. But, you know, this gives them a different opportunity to explore some of their social skills in different avenues, you know, doing the podcasts and doing the shout casting and, you know, all the in-game communication where it has to be, you know, quick and direct, very to the point. They all play games, you know, we need to use that to our advantage, you know, give them opportunities, you know, like NASIF, they have a whole curriculum for English for all 4 years that you can tie into esports. Because
wow.
You can, you know, it's just journalism and marketing, you know, and blog posts and even research, you know, is you can do anything with this. It's such a broad STEM activity.
And while we don't know how a generation of esports players in school will affect students as they enter adulthood, this clip from our episode with Isaac Arrington, the event manager for the Dallas Mavericks professional esports team, Mavs Gaming, gives us his perspective on the intersection of esports and life and career skills.
One thing I would want to tell people is a lot of what I do isn't esports and gaming related, if that makes sense. A lot of what I do is going to talk to people. A lot of what I do is going out into the community, trying to recruit for our events or trying to find potential clients to rent the space. Just because the gaming industry, especially for a startup like us, it's just not big enough for us to hang our hat on yet. We're going to have to be a lot of different things in order to be successful. I mean, let's say you want to save up to buy a new car. Well, you're going to have to go cut some grass. You know, you're going to have to go do some dish work or shovel some snow, depending on where you live. Like, you're going to have to do something that's not driving that new car, building that new car in order to get to those means. And so I would just say, don't be arrogant on, well, I'm only the event manager for Mavs Gaming. If you're not a gaming tournament, I can't talk to you. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, you want to do this? You like our space? We're going to make it happen, you know, because we want that new car. We want new Xboxes. We understand PlayStation 5 is coming out sooner than people think. So it's like at that point, all of our consoles are out of date. Nobody wants to go to a gaming tournament to where you have the last generation console. So we're going to have to come up with a lot of PlayStation. It's not like we're saving up to buy one. Like
right.
we need 20. So it's like, we're really working on things now to where we bring in any event we can, anybody who's interested, any tour that's interested, no matter what time it is. If they want to be here at 7 a.m., we have somebody here at 7 a.m. If they need help loading out till 1 a.m., 2 a.m., all of which we've done, we're going to be here for them because we simply – we just have to make it work. And I just don't see that enough as far as people like working on themselves and working on their career work. And when I say that, working, you know, for a higher company, working for the Dallas Mavericks, working for Mark Cuban, working for your higher ups, working for the NBA to make that work. But then also working on yourself, making sure that, you know, Isaac's still getting skills that he needs and Isaac's still trying to advance in areas that he wants to go in. And so that's kind of similar to where we are. It's like, yes, right. We want to be in gaming, but man, look, we have to work on this stuff first and we have to go do this. You're going to have to back to the building, the club. You're going to have to talk to people like that's in the gaming community. That's a bigger challenge than people consider because we'll put a headset on and we'll be in front of a screen and we'll give you a TED talk like no problem. But if you take the headset off and take the screen away and give us a microphone, we're going to be soft-spoken introverts. So it's like, that's tough. So if somebody's truly a gamer, you're going to have to break your shell, man. Like you're just, it's going to have to happen. There's no ifs, ands, or buts around it. So that's just the one thing I would really want people that are thinking about getting in the gaming industry to really understand is that there's a lot that goes into it. There's a lot more that people see. And one of the better quotes I've heard is championships aren't built in field arenas. You're going to have to do a lot of things when people aren't looking. You're going to have to put in a lot of long hours for the hope that 5 years from now, we're going to be set up. 10 years from now, we're going to be, you know, chilling. So you just have to work for tomorrow.
All right, so that's as long as I'm going to keep you for today, but we will have a couple more meetings before the semester wraps up. So you've still got homework and a chance for a little extra credit. The homework, well, you know what to do. Go look in the show notes for this episode in your podcast player or at tcea.org/edtechclub. There you can find links to relevant topics, interesting web pages on these topics, and of course you'll find links to the previous episodes we nodded to in this episode. Now, if you want a little extra credit, this is a fun one, but the clock is ticking on it. You see, on Tuesday, December 10th, 2 p.m., we're going to be having our virtual live chat with Santa Claus. No, I'm not kidding. Santa Claus. He's going to be here. Yeah, I know you're jealous. Well, you don't have to be jealous. You can watch him live. He's going to be reading a story, and he's going to be answering your education and EdTech questions. So, if you want to earn some extra credit as a member of the EdTech Club, send your questions to Santa. There's a form to ask your question for Santa in the show notes for this episode. You can also find it at the Tech Notes blog at blog.tcea.org and on our website, tcea.org. Which segues very nicely in me telling you you should check out TCEA online and using your favorite social media apps, Facebook, Twitter, and more, of course. And you're going to want to jump on now because between now and the end of the year and the beginning of next semester, which is coming sooner than you think, we're going to keep giving you the latest EdTech news and information, connecting with you in all the ways you need. So follow us on your favorite social media platform. And don't forget to support the podcast. Give us a rating or a review. It really helps on your podcast player. And send your questions, ideas, and more to podcast@tcea.org. So that's it for our unorthodox clip show version of today's EdTech Club meeting. And we will be back next week with another episode. But until then, I'm Andrew Rausch. Thanks for being a part of the club. EdTech Club is a production of TCEA. To learn more and to join, go to tcea.org.